So the three poisons were interesting, and we were joking about Anna and I about how he kind of got the negative sound. We volunteered to be sure, but we got the sort of negative sounding things to talk about. But it's sort of on purpose because it's so important. And right at the heart of Buddhist cosmology, sort of the sense of how things are structured, is this great wheel that represents our bondage within the cycle of life. And right in the center of that are three barnyard animals. There's three barnyard animals in the center of that. And you might think that the core of our suffering would be represented by something really substantial, more substantial than a chicken and a pig and a snake. Like, what about something awesome like a whale or a lion or something? So I think part of the key to this is it's manageable. You know, there's a difficulty, but it's manageable. It's just three little animals. And what does that mean in terms of those aspects of us? And here's one of my animals. I can meet Arizelle, who always likes to hang out during teachings because she likes energy. So the bad news is that the Buddhist name for these, the three poisons, suggests a formidable problem. The good news is it's manageable. We can do something with it. You've probably heard that the Buddha repeatedly distilled his teachings down into one sentence: I teach suffering and the end of suffering. So this suggests, if we really understand what he means, suffering and the end of suffering, we're home free. So we're not talking about these three poisons because we're masochists, but because we want to be home free. And I'd like to suggest that there is really something that'll help us here. So what are the three poisons and how do they correspond to these animals? And I'm going to do a little screen share here. And here we have the wheel of life in Tibetan iconography. And just real briefly, from the outside, this is Yama, who's kind of holding us all as we go around and around and around, trapped in the wheel of life. The outer ring is the 12 links of dependent origination, which Tuari and Tim have been talking about. The second ring, this is the six realms of existence. So the human realm, the animal realm, the hell realm, the hungry ghosts, the warring gods, and the god realms. And then down here in the center, and due to the wonders of technology, I can make it bigger, I think. Come on, it was working before. Anyway, down in the center is the, there we go. Is there you go, the three barnyard animals. So first is greed, depicted as a rooster. And think of, you know, roosters are pretty much out for themselves on the top of the pile, very male, full of assurance of me first. Second is aversion, depicted as a snake. Some unfair maybe, but from our human point of view, we tend to look at them as difficult and dangerous creatures. And the third is ignorance, depicted as a pig. Also unfair because pigs are so smart, but nonetheless, culturally we tend to look at them as coarse and ignorant. And notice that they're literally feeding on each other. They're chewing on each other's tails. They're going around and around. So the idea is this drives the whole wheel of samsara. The whole problem has to do with the aspects of us that are like this. So right at the center of all this is the three poisons. And this is where we can do a lot of letting go and cutting through, because as we understand that there are these poisons, we also understand how we're poisoning ourselves. And when we understand that, then we can start to understand how to be free. So there's a positive side to this. In a sense, there's a possibility of an alternative or an antidote. It's so funny, I'm sort of patting Arizelle with my left hand. The Buddha said, slightly edited, "Mendicants, there are these three poisons. What three? Greed, hate, and delusion. These are the three poisons. To give up these three, you should develop three things. What three? You should develop the perception of ugliness to give up greed, love to give up hate, and wisdom to give up delusion. These are the three you should develop to give up these three poisons." You know, and often it's said that recognizing the enemy is the first step to victory. And in this case, the enemy isn't Godzilla, but free barnyard animals. So it's when we see ourselves in these animals, what they depict, that's where this becomes powerful and sort of really tactile for us on the path. So let's start with the rooster, greed, and time check. Let's see, we've got 25. I will try to wait 25. It might be 8:30, it might be 5 minutes late. So rooster, greed, what does that mean? You know, what do we recognize about ourselves here? And speaking for myself, I can clearly say that when I want something, I can find myself kind of narrowing around this. It's not mindfulness, it's wanting. You know, we kind of close down around it a little bit. It's kind of like a claw in our minds that draws us toward that thing and away from generosity. Now, how many people here saw Lord of the Rings? Remember the movie, Lord of the Rings? Everybody probably saw it, right? The grasping is right there. You know, it's intense grasping ignited by this ring that warps the psyches of everyone from Gollum to Frodo. But we're kind of like that. In a subtle ways, we're kind of like that. And that's why it's good to see us, because, you know, Black Friday, I don't know, people get all, they do all this stuff, and look at the resources people pour into fast cars when the planet's dying from CO2. You know, we sort of focus on what we want and ignore the consequences. And it draws us away from the present, from this moment, because we're looking into the future to figure out and scheme how we're going to get something. Did anybody ever do that? Plan for something you want to have? Yeah, right? And we kind of like push ourselves ahead to get it. And that's a future that doesn't exist. It's not here. And then look at how greed separates us from others. My wife, Ellen, is wonderful. She's super conscious. And we've developed this subtle little exploration about little subtle aspects of that. Like, you know, there's two bowls of cranberry sauce. And there's this little moment when you think, oh, I'm going to keep the bigger one for myself. And you can see right in that moment how in a subtle way these, like, your boundaries kind of, these shutters go up and you separate yourself from others. You ever notice that? It's really, really subtle. To be able to say it out loud, which we do, we kind of play around with it all the time, but there's all kinds of subtle ways that greed, that rooster part of us is a poison. And when we can see it, we'll be mindful of it. Just like Anna was saying, it's, by the way, we're in the same, very similar turf, and that's cool. So you can hear it twice and learn from it, because when we can be mindful in that moment, that's when we're breaking out of that bondage of greed. And for people who have trouble with the whole idea of not self and the Dharma, this is a place where you can start to see it. Because look, when we're trapped by our own greed, we're generating a sense of self right there. That's the place to see it. When you find yourself looking towards greed or pulled by your greed, go, oh, look, there's my self happening. There's my selfing happening right there. So if you ever wondered, look, just try it out. Next time you want something, try it out. Just take a look at yourself and see what's going on. And right there, you're generating a sense of self, that sticky self, which is in fact the problem. And it's a sort of clutching adhesion. And it's a selfing whose interests must be defended, even if that means pushing others away. But the good news is we don't have to be like a rooster or like Gollum, but our insight practice, this greedy rooster, starts to dissolve. And so that's why the three poisons and the hindrances are doorways, because it's right there, just where the problem is, the fire of the problem is, that the solution is. Sariputta, one of the Buddha's chief disciples, was once asked, what is nirvana? He answered, the destruction of greed, the destruction of anger, the destruction of delusion. This is nirvana. So this is a path of freedom we're on, to not be bound by conditions internal and external. And we kind of guide ourselves on the path. So the more we can see the possibilities of freedom, the less we have to be limited by the alternative. So in terms of the shedding or letting go, you start to kind of identify, and you can really use it as a tool. You can identify that shading that happens in your heart and mind, or your heart mind, when the poison of greed arises, and just check it, just see it, be mindful of it right there, and right there, you're cutting through it. And that's a form of suffering when we're stuck, but if we can see it, we can get free. The Buddha said you should develop the perception of ugliness to give up greed. So this also suggests how powerful is an antidote of greed, which is generosity. And look at what happens internally when we generate generosity. You know, you help someone across the street, you give someone the bigger bowl of cranberries, you donate to help someone struggling with COVID. You hear someone, let's listen to someone who needs to be heard, you know? And look what happens. You ever notice that? Like this light happens inside yourself, a lightness happens, that it's the opposite direction of that self-constricting. It opens up. Isn't that cool? And so this is like a tool we can work with, and we can untangle, you know? Just every time we do that, we're untangling the wheel of samsara that's rotating from a, you know, certain point of view for countless lifetimes, over and over and over again. We've been incarnated. It depends how you feel. I'm not saying you have to believe in reincarnation, but just from a cosmological point of view, that's the idea. That's been happening over and over again. And every time we're generous, we undo it a little bit. Now, the poison of aversion, as you might have suspected, is much the same. You know, snakes actually are probably less aggressive than their reputation. They don't hate anybody. They just need to eat. But you get the idea. So look, when we moved toward hatred, even in subtle ways, think about how much this has to do about opposition to others, usually other people, because often our greeds or desires or wants are thwarted. And then we feel hatred or anger or pushback because something got in the way of what we wanted. That's usually what's happening, whether it's warring nations or politicians or individuals. You know, that's usually what's happening. And we can see this, you know, in the world of racial inequities, of struggles over resources and land and power. But right here, this is a place where our mindfulness practice can uncouple that darkness of hatred, of ill will. And we can find freedom. And, you know, the practice is like, sometimes I think of it like little pearls on a string. And every time we wake up, that's a pearl, and to treasure it. And then there'll be another one, treasure that. And that's, the more pearls, the better. Over time, that's what leads us ahead in the path. So, you know, next time you feel like you got an enemy, someone we're opposed to, look what's happening. Look how the energy's colored, how we clutch around ourselves and that enemy, and how it gets real concretized in terms of selfing. It happens right there. That coagulation, right there. And so if we can see it, that's where the mindfulness happens, because if we can see it, it doesn't exist. It's just something that we put together out of fear, out of opposition. And the antidote, so there's mindfulness, one way to cut through it, and then there's the antidote, what we generate, which is love. You know, loving kindness, wishing for the happiness and welfare of all beings, or wishing for the happiness and welfare of the person who just cut us off while we're driving, or who's messed up our garbage pail. You know, loving kindness toward them, that also undoes it. They can work together. So it pulls us out of that poison of aversion. So it's not, you know, I find the wheel of life useful. I don't pretend to know whether it's rebirth is true or not, but it's useful because it helps us kind of envision the relentlessness of being caught. And right at the hub of it are these qualities. So I just use it as a kind of a visual metaphor, just to remind myself sometimes when something seems small, it's not small. It's really worth paying attention to, because our spiritual life is built on all these little things. And if we don't pay attention, it's like a whirlpool just sucking someone down. And like Anna said, you know, we're kind of I always think there's like the Buddha on one end and a total hardcore mainlining addict on the other end, and we're somewhere in between. You know, we got qualities of addiction, all of us, and we can wake up from that. But that's it's right here in the center where that is. And then the third, watching the clock here, of these three poisons, and the most elusive is ignorance. And in this context, this isn't a lack of information or lack of cognitive intelligence, because most of us got plenty of both, but actually it has to do with ignorance of the very, our very nature of being, of who we are. Because we tend to think, you know, we're sort of this solid self, and we think the objects we want and abhor are the same. So you got a solid self wanting a solid object, and you got a problem. There's no perspective. And if that were the case, you know, probably the endless pursuit of satisfaction and acquisition would make sense. And what's that motto? The he who dies with the most toys wins, or something like that. But it's not like that. And that's not how it is. And so, but we can see that. I'm not just because I'm saying it, you know, your practice will show you that. And so this third poison of ignorance, shown as a pig, drives everything. And Jeffrey Hopkins, he's a Buddhist scholar, former translator of the Dalai Lama, he says it's ignorance that drives the entire process. Ignorance isn't just an inability to apprehend the truth, but an active misapprehension of the status of oneself and all other objects, one's own mind or body, other people, and so forth. It is the conception or assumption that phenomena exist in a far more concrete way than they actually do. So this is the subtlest of the three, this wisdom, because really it's one of those deals where if we actually knew what it was, we'd be Buddhists. So that's why we practice. You know, it's subtle. It's subtle. It's hard to see. It's a little bit like looking for your eyeglasses, because you can't see them till you find them, but you need to find them. And so we're a little bit in the dark, but once you find them, you can see, but you got to find them. So it's a little bit like that. But the good news is we incrementally gain wisdom, seeing things as impermanent, without inherent self, just through our gradual countering of greed and hatred. And the very things we were talking about, it helps get us there. So coupled with our mindfulness practice, which brings awareness of impermanence and turning away from greed and aversion toward generosity and kindness, it chips away at this fundamental ignorance. So this isn't a fast process, but it's sure and inexorable. You know, it gets us there. And along the way, you know, we come to places where we might feel stuck, where letting go seems just too much. And this is where sort of the warrior aspect of the Dharma emerges. You know, there's a place in the practice where we got to step up, where it's hard. That's where we're going to grow the most, by the way. So worth doing that. But it is, there's times when you got to be a warrior. And this is not, well, back to the Lord of the Rings, remember Frodo, if I remember this right, correct me if I'm wrong, Frodo actually couldn't let go of the ring. At the very last moment, he wouldn't have let go except Gollum bit off his finger, remember? And then Gollum had this moment of, woohoo, I have my precious. But that triumph was brief, and he fell down into the middle of Mount Doom and burned in the lava. So the point is, this is powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. And in the Buddha's awakening, as some of you may know, you know, he had to battle against greed and aversion all night. Mara, you know, sort of, it's all metaphorical, whatever. But Mara, all these, his undulating, beautiful daughters, that was the attraction part, I guess. Buddha said, no thanks. And then a million warriors coming at him with all kinds of spears. That was the fear part, the aversion part. And he said, no thanks. So he was free of that. So incrementally, we're all doing little bits of that. And never underestimate how important it is. Just one moment of kindness, one moment of mindfulness. It's how this happens. And it undoes the three poisons driving the wheel of samsara and your own stickiness. It's a new Buddhist word I just make up. So I think that's it. Right on time. Look at that.